I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice, another afternoon escapade with Lieutenant Joe and all of you in the Chasing Justice family. Well, the holidays are coming and going. The Georgia election is up next. Which way is it going to go? Which way is our country going to go? You know, I started to create an article that I want to put up on the AmericaOutloud.com platform. I'm wrestling with what I'm going to call it and exactly where it's going to go, but basically the gist is something like this, and this is the question I'm asking today, this afternoon. Is this the end of America as we know it? Will she go down with a whimper and just disappear into the fog of socialism? Or will we find some way to recover from the nightmare that we're going to find ourselves in? Because right now, we clearly have slim hopes for President Trump to be reelected. It's not probably going to happen. I hate to say that. I feel that there was a lot of problems in the election, a lot of difficulties that really do need to be looked at, a lot of inconsistencies, and a lot of potential fraud. But we're counting on our left-wing friends to really care that the election was fair, and they don't. They would do away with elections tomorrow, I think, if they could. You know, I think, what do they call it? Prima facie. For all our lawyer friends out there, a prima facie case is when it's like 51 to 49. 51% something happened, 49 it didn't. So therefore you have to look at it closer. How they cannot look at this closer is just, not only is it frustrating for those people who believe, and some people do believe extremely strongly, that not only was there some fraud, that there was major fraud. Now, we don't know because it's not reported on. Nobody reports on it accurately. Let me ask you this question. If we have so many more people voting for Joe Biden instead of Donald Trump in the face of what we saw in the fall with the thousands and thousands of people at Trump rallies and seven people at a Joe Biden rally, and I was at one of those Trump rallies. It was amazingly energetic. The people were enthused all over. It was in Pennsylvania. It was really an amazing event. But how come we haven't seen any reporters go out and say, okay, listen, could anybody tell me that you voted for Trump last time and you decided to vote for Biden this time? Could you come forward? Could you just email this email address and give me your name and you'd be willing to talk to me? Because why would you switch over? You know, why would so many people in Pennsylvania who had no presence whatsoever, other than at Trump rallies, suddenly vote in numbers that overturn the Trump victory in Pennsylvania and Georgia and these other states? How come nobody goes out and says, listen, if you're someone who has never voted before, and this was your first election, and you decided that instead of voting for Donald Trump, you were going to vote for Joe Biden, could you email this address and give us your name? We'd like to talk to you. And then do some research, actually do some investigating, actually ask some questions, and try and figure out. Because we don't get any honest information from the media. The media has absolutely chosen sides. I think that is probably one of the greatest losses of 2020, of the year 2020, is to realize that there is no reliable news source out there, other than, of course, America Out Loud. But other than that, I mean, our major cable news networks, they are all biased to the left. Even Fox News, that everybody said was a right-wing place. All I ever saw Fox News is that they would have a conservative on and a Democrat on, and they would let them go at it, you know, as opposed to the other places where you'd have, you know, four Democrats and one timid Republican who couldn't make their case or wouldn't make their case. So as I look at this, I'm asking that question. Is this the first steps to a socialist America? Because we've been talking about it for a long time. And I think really most of us who are freedom, liberty-loving people, we were buoyed by the Trump rallies. We were excited to see that much enthusiasm. The economy was going to be coming back. We could see it start to come back from this COVID-19 rampage that we've been dealing with. And we could see that another Trump term, how much Middle East peace can there be, right? How many more countries have come on board and said they're now going to recognize the state of Israel and create peace in the Middle East? You would have think that would have been the greatest accomplishment of any president. Yet, not barely a word. Like it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. You know, we look at this COVID stimulus bill, this $2.3 trillion spending boondoggle. Now, I get it's the budget for the entire country to keep it from shutting down, and it funds us through September of 2021. But the reality, why is all of that COVID money not going directly to the people of America? I mean, if we're going to go into debt, we're going to take on more debt, which is unbelievably crazy, but we're going to do it. People need the money. They need the help. They need the relief. Okay. How come all of that money didn't go to the American citizen? What other countries do you know of that their government taxes their people and then writes a check to the United States? Do we get any money? No. That was one of the things that I think a lot of people liked about Donald Trump. He went around the world and said, hey, America's providing your safety and security. You're supposed to be paying for it and you're not. Well, now you got to cough up. Well, that angered those countries. And then what did all these idiot politicians say? America's not respected anymore. America's not respected. Trump is a bully. Well, you know, there's an old saying in the La Cosa Nostra, and they say, it is better to be feared than to be loved. Because if people love you, they will take advantage of you. When they fear you, they will do right because they're afraid of what can happen. I'm not suggesting something negative. I'm just trying to point out philosophical thoughts. When you let people get away with things, they will. These countries never paid for their own defense, or they didn't pay enough. America was footing the bill for them. You and I, they were going into our paychecks, taking money away from our families to send money around the world. Now, we're sending what? At $10 million to Pakistan to do gender studies. Okay, gender studies are important. We need to understand the human nature of things. That's great. Why do the American citizens have to spend money in Pakistan to help them figure out who they are? That's for them to figure out. That's for them to spend money on if they think that's important. You know, is that just really a way to send money and that's what it's packaged under? Who knows? I don't know. But this is where I'm not going to be a defeatist. I'm hoping that when the electors show up for this election, that they are challenged rightfully. Where is our courts? We have been abandoned by all the elements of freedom and liberty. And we're all left to our own devices, and nobody seems to think it's any big deal. This is where I think historically people may be missing the boat. Because I'm thinking, and I've talked to lots of people, family, friends, other people, that have the feeling that, listen, Trump was so disruptive to everyone, the right and the left, that was too much. And therefore, everybody just wants him to go away. No matter how good of a job he did, they just want him to go away. Then everything will come back to normal. And of course, we'll still be free. Of course, we'll still have our liberty. That's never going to change. This is America. Well, unfortunately, my friends, that's a problem because you're not looking at the realities of history. History paints the picture very clear. What's that other old saying? You know, I'm filled with old sayings today. Anyone who doesn't know history will be doomed to repeat it. Tyranny, evil, dictators, they wait in the wings always to jump up. Now, I would say we didn't have to worry about that if we didn't see open socialists in our government now. People who are talking about taking away freedoms and changing our liberties and changing the Constitution. Do away with the Constitution. Get rid of it. Come up with a new one. You know, Obama started that. He wanted a Constitution of positive rights. You know, not what the government couldn't do to you, what they could do for you. This is a complete change in thinking. It is if you study history. It is very clear. It is the kind of thinking that has brought down every great civilization that has achieved long-term success. You know, you go back and look at these major civilizations, and as they got wealthier and they got more powerful and they had more control, over the course of time, all of that success led to weakness. You know, it's kind of like, everybody remembers the movie Rocky, right? Let's remember Rocky from back in the day, Sylvester Stallone. Hey, yo, Adrian, hey, yo, I did it, right? Everybody remembers him. Rocky was young and hungry, and he knew what he wanted. He knew what was important, and he put his heart and soul into trying to win the title. And he went out there, and he fought. And he fought very, very hard. Now, in the first movie, he didn't win, but in the second movie, he did. The second movie, he attained his goal. And then what did we see played out on the silver screen there? Well, of course, when you were allowed to go to the movies. We saw, as Rocky got rich, as he got famous, he slowed down, he took things for granted, he got caught up in the entire process of being wealthy and of having an easier life, and that slows you down. The hunger goes away. Well, if we look at that in context of the United States, our hunger, the thing that pushed us, our impetus to make our own country, was freedom and liberty. And we saw an opportunity to take that, and the moment was just right. The right people, the right time, the right enemy. All of these things came down to a specific moment in time, but we were hungry for that freedom. We were hungry for that liberty. And even though it passed through Americans, right, that all those feelings passed through Americans, they are the feelings of all humanity at one point or another that longs for its freedom, that longs for its liberty. This is one of the reasons America has become the place to go, the place to be across the entire globe. Because that's what America stood for. We were the ability of the individual to experience what was important to them, to see the world the way they wanted to see it, to experience it based on their drives, their desires, to praise their God and to worship as they saw fit, which didn't happen anywhere else in the world. This was an amazing, blessed place for 200 and something years. But over the course of time, we have gotten slow. We have gotten fat. We have become successful. You know, and I say this without trying to say it in a negative way or without trying to say it disrespectfully. There has always been poor with us. There was poor in the time of Jesus, and there's poor people today. And we have to do what we can as a society to try and help lift the poor out of their poverty. That is only the right thing to do. But we do that by offering training and opportunity for people to rise up, right? To rise up and do for themselves, to use their God-given talents to make their life better. You know, we know that that works. We know it worked for me, and I know it works for lots and lots of people. Well, that's what America has to be. When we see today, when we have so much abundance, our poor today in America. And I always hate saying this, but when you look at it, if you look at the poor in India, they're living in the street. They're living in cardboard boxes. They're living in abject poverty. Our poor have apartments. Our poor have cars. Our poor have air conditioning. Our poor have cell phones. Our poor have a lot of the amenities of life that would be considered wealthy anywhere else in the world. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that being poor in America is, oh, what a great time. It's not. Poor, being poor, and poverty grinds on your soul. It can zap the life out of you. No matter how hard you work, you can't sometimes get ahead. Believe me, I've been there. As a kid, we ate pasta 5 nights a week. We ate these stupid Salisbury steaks in a bag because they were like 88 cents, and that's what we could buy. You know, we heated them up in boiling water, and that was our dinner. That and spaghetti, because it was cheap. I know the feeling of poverty. I know what it's like to see other people, other friends, other kids, other young people have things that you don't have. You know, it's funny. probably mid-career, I was no longer in that position as a police officer. Police officers are paid pretty well today. But we still didn't, we made choices to send our kids to Catholic school. Well, that zaps your finances. You know, we made choices to spend things on the kids, make sure they had good clothes, make sure they got every single thing that they needed. Things that, you know, Kathleen and I didn't necessarily have because it just wasn't available to us when we were kids. But that kind of really zapped our income. So that when my first son, Joseph, the attorney of record here on Chasing Justice, when Joseph first started driving, we got a car from a neighbor, belonged to the neighbor's mom, who was very elderly, hadn't driven it in quite a while, and it just sat in the driveway. And it looked like it was in good shape. You know, I'm not a mechanic, what did I know? And I talked to the guy one day. He goes, listen, my mom's never going to drive that again. Give me $500 and you can take it out of here. Well, we had to push it from one driveway to the other driveway. And we got it running, and it wasn't the greatest car. It wasn't the nicest car. It was a car. And it got Joe around, and it was safe. And, you know, it wasn't a sports car like some of his other friends had, but it was a car. But the long story here is that my comment to my son Joe, and actually to Alex also when he came of driving age a few years later, I said, the best thing a Pangaro man can have when you're driving, do you know what that is? And they thinking about it, and I said, I don't know. A good car? I said, no. Think harder. And they were stumped. And I said, the best thing you can have is a good pair of shoes, because that car is going to break down and you're going to have to walk. Because even as an adult, I've had cars break down and had to walk. This is a long way around this story here to say that I understand what poverty is. And I have worked very hard to get myself and my family out of poverty. And I know poverty is not easy to get out of. I'm not saying any, you know, this pull you up by your bootstraps as though everybody can just do it tomorrow. I get that. I know it's not easy, and nobody, not everyone is going to achieve the same financial status as anyone else. But the reality is you can change your status. You can change your life by working hard, getting educated, following the rules, doing these things. And when I look and I see America, we have so much abundance here. We have so much abundance that our longing for freedom and liberty is dissipating. We take it so much for granted. Our young people take this so much for granted that they don't understand. They are one nasty, negative, power-hungry, tyrannical leader away from losing their freedom, from becoming a person who's stuck wishing and praying for freedom and liberty again. And that is the reality of what we face here. What we're seeing here, if there was the fraud that everyone seems to believe that there is, then our elections have been stolen from us, which means our freedom and our liberty has been stolen from us. Why are our politicians, our representatives, not listening to at least 75 million of us and saying, we need to at least look at this? This needs to be investigated as seriously as we investigated nonsense about Russian interference in the last election. We need to spend at least that much time and energy. Let's do this. Because if we don't know the truth, when this is taken away, it can lead to some very, very desperate times. And desperate people do what? They do desperate things. So let's think about that for a minute, and we'll be back with more Chasing Justice in a minute.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope that wasn't too dark in that first half. You know, I listen to myself as I talk about this. I make my notes and I try and gather my thoughts, and spending time here with you is really cathartic for me, because it allows me to work my way through what I actually think about things. And that's why sometimes I go around a corner, my stories get a little long, but the reality is I'm trying to come to this understanding myself. And this is the way critical thinking is supposed to work. You think about an idea and then you ruminate on it. You listen to other people. You read about things. You do some research. You go out and look with your own eyes and see what it is you actually do see and what you imagine. And then you try to come to some reasonable, logical understanding of what you believe about it. Now, all of that goes back to core values. You know, I guess that's why we can say, why would one person look at a situation one way and another person look at the exact same situation and see it a different way? All right? So core values, we don't really talk about them a lot. We don't really discuss them. I don't think they teach them in school. The values they teach them in school now, I don't think, we know they don't teach proper civics. They don't teach government. They don't teach about the Constitution. They teach, you know, these modern era kind of concepts about social justice and how America's evil and America's sins of the past, and trying to come to recognize those things, you know, as that's the most important thing to understand, where the country started from and how it started bad, and therefore we need to throw out all of that. That's what the whole tossing statues is all about. That's what they're getting rid of Abraham Lincoln now, because they're saying Abraham Lincoln didn't care about black lives, right? Unbelievable. You can take any story, any line, and twist it to make it the way you want based on your core values. So when I teach, and I teach an ethics class, and we talk about core values, because it's your core values that are going to determine how you see something, how you respond to something, what impression it makes on you. First section, we talked about the poor. All right, so if your core value is more self-centered, or you have a wavering core value, you're just a person out there to do for you, you're not worried about anybody else. When you see poor people, you can scoff at them, you can laugh at them, you can have opinions that, you know, they're just bums. But if you have a different set of core values, and a lot of times based on a religious upbringing, where you see people, you see human beings that are struggling. Now you see individual faces, you see a father or mother trying to help their child, to feed their child. You see a young child who really may not understand the conditions they're in, but you can see their individual faces and you say, we need to help, right? So then we can even break that down further. There are people that, I guess, see both things, but say, okay, yeah, we need to help. This is how we're gonna help. We'll give them. Stuff, because, you know, they can't do it on their own. And then there's people that say, listen, they're under some difficult situations. They maybe don't have the skills, the acumen. They may don't have all the things that they need to help themselves. So let's find a way to get that for them. That's the old adage. You know, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Teach him to fish, you feed him for his whole lifetime. That's two different philosophies, two different core values of what's important in life and how you deal with people. And I guess politically, we can see the same thing. I mean, I see so many people on the left who really don't get the whole, once the government gives you stuff and they got you hooked onto them, you know, it is like a drug. You know, you look for that check every single month, you're looking for that money, where's that extra money? And they call it things like free money, free education, free college. Well, nothing is for free. The buildings that those schools are in, they're not for free. There's mortgages on that. There's money owed on it. The professors and the teachers and the orderlies and the assistants and everybody in that building, the secretarial people, the administrator, all of them get paid. I mean, they get paid in what? What do they get paid in? Good thoughts and happiness? No, they get paid a check. They get paid a check for their work. There's money. That money comes from somewhere. And unfortunately, because we don't educate people properly, we don't have those conversations, people just think that, well, the government just has all this money that they're keeping and they're giving to the rich guys.
That's what they're doing with it. They're just giving it to the rich guys. They're not giving it to us. So now if we can get politicians to give it to us, that would be fair. It's such a convoluted view of things. It is so damaging to our national psyche, which is what leads people into thinking socialism is better. When all we have is these young people that we gave everybody a trophy so nobody would feel bad, instead of learning you had to earn. And the guy or the girl who wins is because they were the best. Unless they cheated, and if they cheated, they got punished. So that everybody saw you don't cheat, right? Everybody gets a trophy now. I remember coaching, and I've told you some of my stories of coaching my kids, because I tried to do the right thing and be a coach, you know, help out. And I remember it was T-ball. And I go to the meeting, and there's all these T-ball people there, and the referee people, and they're trying to tell you the rules. And I said, listen, this year we're not keeping score on the games. And I thought I had something in my ear. I thought I had, you know, carrot or wax or something. I said, excuse me, what? We're not doing what? They said, we're not keeping score at the games. I said, well, then it's not really a game then, is it? Then it's just, you know, what are we doing if we're not keeping score? The kids are going to keep score. No, they won't. Because then, you know, you could get some teams that have really talented kids and they'll beat them 42-0. And those kids will feel terrible. So we're no longer going to keep score. We're just going to go out and play. I said, well, how do you decide when the side is down? Did they get three outs and they're over? Didn't they fail? So how do we know when to change sides? Do we just let you? Well, we'll have five or six kids bat, and then we'll switch sides, and the other side will go then, and they'll do five or six. I said, for how long? Well, just like the innings, every time we change guys, that'll be an inning, and then that'll be the end of it. And I said, I don't know if that's really a good idea, because I don't think that's fair to the kids. The kids are out there playing. They want to win. These kids want to play. They want to win. I think they do. And I'm telling you, the looks I got from people, because I guess I hadn't been in the loop on this kind of a thought pattern. They're like, listen, you got to get the idea. We want the kids to enjoy the sport, not go home. You see these kids, they cry when they don't win. And I said, wait a minute. I remember being a young kid on a sports team, and boy, it hurt when you lost, especially when you're playing an important game, and you thought it would be great to play that game. How much fun that would be to play that game. But then you lost, and you felt bad for an afternoon, and sometimes you went back and decided, hey, how can I be better at what I do? How can I practice more? I remember being in my backyard throwing the ball against the wall so that I could catch grounders better. Right, my father out there throwing the ball with me, trying to help me be better at what I did. And I was really confounded by this whole thought that there's going to be no winner or loser. And at the end of the year, there was a table full of trophies, you know, for all the teams. And there was a trophy with everybody's name on it. Now, I was not going to win when I was a kid, the best batter. But there was a kid who was a great batter, and he deserved to be recognized for that. Right? And my daughter, she played soccer. And my daughter was, she liked soccer. Marisa enjoyed soccer, but she was not a big soccer fan. But there were girls that loved soccer and that were excellent players. And they got the most goals. They deserved the trophy for the most goals or for the greatest save if the girl was a goalie, whatever. We learn to be better by watching people who are good at things and emulating them, trying to be like them, trying to rise to that level. Now, truth is, not all of us will. Not all of us will rise to the level of being the best at anything. And is that unfair? I guess you could say that's unfair. I guess you could say that's a shame. Not everybody gets to be the superstar. But the reality is, you want to try your best and give it your best effort so that you can try to be better. You see what I'm saying? I'm going, this is what we've left these kids now. We've taught these kids that America is bad, that the country is unfair to those people out there who are not in your situation. It's even bad based on the race that you are, right? Your race is bad because you may not be a bad person, but you're living a life based on evilness that your race brought to the world, and therefore you should dislike yourself. Well, that self-loathing, that self-hatred, that negativity turns people... It turns their thoughts into things that I don't even know how to describe what they come up with. But we see it evidenced now. When we see that over 40% of our young people think socialism is a good idea and it's probably a better way to go. Well, that number is just going to grow. That number is just going to grow. As that philosophy takes hold more and more, it's going to become the right thing. Which leads me to say, do we now have the right way to think and the wrong way to think in our country? Let's ask that. Is there a right way to think and a wrong way to think? I think we all know that there is. Right now, we know political correctness, if you don't speak correctly, if you don't use the right terms, if you don't ignore the right things and identify with the other things, whatever they are, then you're considered either ignorant, evil, or a combination of both. Unless you're politically correct, then you're good and you're wholesome. Well, that has gotten to our words. You know, how many words can't we say anymore? You can't use any words. You can't say certain words. Words you could say today, you can't say tomorrow. You know, things that were symbols of freedom and liberty are now considered symbols of oppression and hatred. These were iconic. Abraham Lincoln, for God's sake. Abraham Lincoln, who epitomized doing the right thing for people. Now, I don't know personally. I don't know him personally. He was gone before I got here. But what we can see, the things he actually did changed the lives of millions of people. It helped our brother and sister African-American Americans. It changed their life. To turn around now and say he didn't care about those people? I don't get that. But that's what we're teaching our kids. And we're having our kids not only believe that, but they are now taking it to the next level all on their own. They are the ones who are now demanding the next level. These are the AOCs, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right? These are these people. These are the squad people that have been elected, the Bernie Sanders people that have been elected. All of these people are now in positions of power. And we see AOC saying the other day, blatantly now, we know there was a battle going on for the power of the Democratic Party. But when somebody asked her, hey, do you really think, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer should go? She said, yeah, it's time to move on and shift the power. Shift the power to what? Nancy and Chuck are bad enough as crazy liberals that they are. Shift the power to what? To AOC and the squad? Where they'll come and take all your weapons and they'll be thought police, they'll be word police, they'll be action police, they will assign you a job. Now people laugh at that. And they say, hey, Joe, you're kind of going over the deep end here. Is this really just for effect, for the radio? No, it's looking at history and seeing how these things develop. This doesn't just happen overnight. This doesn't just happen the next day where they're going to be a dictator. AOC will be a dictator and put on, you know, her funny hat and run around and be the dictator. It's that thought pattern, that level of thinking, that there are good words and bad words. There are things you're allowed to say and not allowed to say. There are rights that you should no longer have, right? We will make those decisions now because you voted for us. You voted centralized government will make these decisions for your life, okay? This is how it gets there. I mean, we are so used in America, we're so used to our freedom and our liberty because it's all we've ever known. It's all we've ever known. Politicians change hands. The power went back and forth without a problem. But we're starting to see now that, do you think if they get in power, well, stop myself right there. We saw with Donald Trump what they did there, how they bastardized the elections, how they tried to use the power of government to destroy a guy who was elected because they didn't like what he did. That's the behind the scenes people. You know, we're all thinking it's we the people out here. We're voting. Well, we voted and they tried to undo it. And they didn't listen to us saying there's nothing here. No, there's half of our country whose core value tells them today that right or wrong doesn't matter as long as they get the result they want. You know, it doesn't matter that there was a coup d'etat. We're going to ignore all that because Trump is bad. We don't like what he stands for. So getting rid of him is more important than using the power of government to attack an American citizen and then a president-elect and then a president. To lie to the courts, to bastardize the courts, to bastardize our law to get rid of him because we just hate him. To the fulmination of this election season, where it is quite possible that enough votes were flipped, manufactured, withheld, added improperly, that the election was stolen. You know, the reason I say that is because as an investigator, I'm looking at the prima facie case. Is there evidence that something bad happened? Why won't they let us look at those machines, those voting machines? I think I said this before. How easy would that be? Here they are. Here's the machines. Go ahead and look through them. You can see every vote that was cast. Where are those envelopes? Now, we're here. And again, see, I'm getting myself frustrated. And I go round and round because we're hearing that, you know, people are reporting that thousands and thousands of these ballots that came in, these paper ballots, they only had one name on them, Joe Biden. Nothing else was filled out. No down ballot people. And then they were pristine. Like they weren't through the mail. They didn't go through the mail. They were just dropped off. Where did they come from? Did somebody manufacture them? Then I see a story today on social media, which again, you have to look at the numbers and try and figure it out, that says, well, you know, there's 177 million registered voters and Trump got 85 million votes. How did Biden get 95 million votes? Or whatever the number is. You know what I mean? The same percentages. How did Trump get, you know, 70% of the vote, but Biden ended up with more votes? There's not enough votes to go around, right? We all look at this and say, something's probably not right. The problem is, half of us intelligent people in America, they also see that, hey, you know, it looks like something probably happened, but you know what? We hate that Trump guy so much. Let it go. Get him out of there. We'll fix it next time. Well, what they don't understand is the power and the weight of history and human nature. Human nature and history is not going to allow this to be fixed. The next election will be all set in advance. They'll be voting. They'll start voting in August, and truckloads of paper ballots that you're not allowed to look at. You're not allowed to match signatures to. You're not allowed to show an ID who did it. Doesn't matter because we're doing an election. And what's best is that we keep giving people things. And on the other end, people are going to say, hey, we got free college. They paid my college loans off. I'm voting for them because next, you know what? It'll be a car in every garage. And then mortgages at half price. This is the slippery slope that we slide down when we allow core values to have no place in what we're doing. You know, the removal of God and the understanding of right and wrong, when that gets removed because right and wrong is considered evil, depending on who's in charge of it, then you can't have it there at all. So to make everything fair, we get rid of the old notions of right and wrong, and we'll make new ones. And the new ones will be fair. But someone has to be the determinant. You know, this is where, unfortunately, without understanding history and understanding how things go, people can be tricked into this. They can be pushed into this. Either way, I think it's coming sooner than we think. And what we're going to do next is anybody's guess. You know, here on Chasing Justice, we're going to constantly monitor it, look at it, make suggestions. We're going to pray and we're going to hope for the best. What are you going to do out there? How are you going to save your country, your freedom, and your liberty? We'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutloud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault. And to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to round three here at Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. You know, we're reaching the change of the calendar. We're reaching the next step into the future. That's what's happening. That's what's happening, right? So when we look at that, we have to say, this year 2020 will fade away into memory. I heard somebody say something today, you know, 10 years from now, you're going to find a coat that you haven't worn in a long time. You're going to go in a pocket and you're going to find a mask and you're going to say, wow, that was a weird and strange time in our country. People were wearing masks. I hope that this fades, you know, as fast as possible. We all know that. We all expected, you know, what was it, 15 days to, you know, to lower the curve so that our hospitals stayed open. Well, our hospitals are open, but they just keep shutting us down, which is a whole nother thing for us to go into. And I don't want to go into that. I'm just looking down the road and I'm saying, we had 4 years basically free of terrorist attacks. We had 4 years free of wars against us, where we got involved. You know, Trump was trying to pull people out. He should pull people out sooner. We have to look at our interests around the world and how we can do this smarter, not so many boots on the ground. Develop that technology to let people know we are your friend. When America is your friend, we are your best friend. When you are our enemy, we are the worst enemy you can ever have. So pick a side and choose wisely, right? Do the right thing. So what happened in Nashville? What happened in Nashville, Tennessee? Can you imagine that? Christmas morning. Now we're starting to get some focus on who they think this guy was, and, you know, what do they call him? Anthony Quinn Warner, as they're saying who this guy was. And he apparently built this bomb. He had an electronics background. Where did he get all the material for the bomb? Was it what kind of bomb was it? What is it, a kerosene fuel bomb? Was it a fertilizer bomb? Who knows? I mean, that's what it kind of sounds like. You can't get that much explosion stuff very easily, you know, unless you're a major contractor that deals in that. But who is this guy that, you know, Christmas morning, I remember listening to the news reports of that and hearing that and saying, well, at 6:30 in the morning, in a downtown, he detonated this bomb. Well, one of two things happened there. One, it detonated by accident. You know, he didn't mean for it to detonate at 6:30. He wanted to detonate at 2 in the afternoon when there'd be thousands of people around, lots of mass casualties. Or he wanted to detonate it at 6:30 in the morning to make a statement. He was trying to say something or do something, and he didn't want casualties. He wasn't looking to have, you know, shoppers walking around and Christmas people having a good time and getting blown up. So those were the two choices there. We're starting to see now that reports are apparently his father died, and his father worked for AT&T for a long time, and he was one of these people that thinks this 5G network is like akin to aliens looking into your brain. Now, I don't know enough about it, other than it's the next generation, you know, generation five of telecommunications, so that we can have, you know, more broadband space, we have more bandwidth, we can do more things digitally, because everything is digital, right? Every single thing we do is digital. When your doorbell has a camera and a microphone and can talk to you when you're away on vacation, that's a pretty crazy world. That's the Jetsons kind of world, you know? It's George Jetson, This is an amazing era we're living in, and this is really the dawn of this digital age. You know, it's been coming 60s and 70s, the advents of computers, and now we're seeing everything in our lives is digitally ruled, and this 5G is making people crazy. You know, it's the government spying on you. They're gonna, guess what, they're already spying on you. They already know everything you need to know, that you want to know. You know, I was talking the other day, Kathleen and I were discussing, you know, Christmas presents, and we're having our evening cocktail, and we're talking about Christmas presents to get for the kids and, you know, make our list. The kids want to know what we want. So I was joking around. I said, you know what? I play guitar. That's one of the things I like to do. I said, I'd really like to get a Fender Stratocaster, you know, a real one, an American-made Fender Stratocaster, you know, the real deal. And she was laughing, and we were talking about it. Well, it had to be a half hour later on all my social media feeds. All of a sudden, ads start popping up for Fender guitars. Now, I know Fender didn't do this. I know the social media people, Google, Facebook, Twitter, they're all listening. They're all listening through my phone, through the algorithms. You know, every time you punch on one of these apps and you say, let them have access to your phone, let them have access to your camera, let them have access to it, you're giving them access to your phone, to your camera, to your microphone, and they're listening. They're listening to you. And that's not individual people. It's not, you know, people with tinfoil hats listening into Joe Pangaro, like as if I have something important to say. But it's an algorithm. And when you mention a product that advertises with them, it connects that it's another little hit. Hey, this guy wants to hear about your product. Next thing I know, I start getting these ads. How many times has that happened to you? Probably quite a few times, especially this holiday time. So this is this digital age, this 5G, you know, I'm hearing from people that it is terrible. It's going to give everybody cancer. It's going to look into your brain. It's going to change your DNA. And then other people are saying, no, dude, it's just the fifth generation of the ability to use the internet out there. It's not, before you know it, there's going to be 6G. We got our first cell phone, and I don't know if it was 1G, but I know there was 2G came out. 2G was pretty cool. And then 3G, wow, that's going to be better. I got 4G on my phone, and every once in a while it pops up 5G. And I can talk really good on it. I can use all my data without the phone being interrupted in my connection, right? So I don't know. I don't know what any of that's really going to mean. But this is apparently this guy who detonated this bomb. As we look at it now, it seems more and more like he did it purposely at 6:30 in the morning so that the casualties would be limited, as small as possible. He put a warning, right? He used a warning telling people, and I listened to it. If you haven't listened to it, it's eerie as hell. You know, this thing is blasting. It's a female voice, which is probably computer generated. And it's saying, you know, if you can hear this, evacuate. If you can hear this, evacuate. So he was not trying to apparently hurt people. It's still a pretty twisted thing to do, to create a bomb and go into anywhere and detonate a bomb. So obviously this guy had problems. When we're seeing his neighbors now come forward, and his, I guess they're going to investigate everybody, looking through his computers, his social media history, his bank accounts, to see what was this guy all about. You know, they're saying, you never would have thought that this guy would do such a thing. You would never would have thought he would be the guy to do a thing like this. You just would not have considered that. But hey, out of nowhere, here comes this guy, and he did it. So as an investigator, I look around, I go, I wonder what my neighbors are up to. Anybody building anything in their basement we should know about? You know, because if these people are out there, and they are out there, they do pop up from time to time. You know, can we spot them? Can we spot them before they go off? A lot of times, we can. There's a thing called leakage. And leakage is, we find leakage with school shooters and business shooters and people that attack their workplaces and stuff. They're so frustrated and angry about whatever's going on in their life that they start talking about it. They start tweeting about it. They start sending out messages about it on social media, that they're angry, they're frustrated, they hate certain people, they want to get them, whatever. That's actually a reality. But in this case, it doesn't seem like there was a lot of leakage. The one thing that I thought was interesting is that his neighbor, they talked to his neighbor, and this guy says, yeah, it was like on the 21st, I saw him out by his mailbox, and I just stopped over to see, you know, what he's up to. He's a neighbor. Say, hi, how are you? And apparently the bomber's mom is elderly, and she's not doing well. And the guy says, hey, how's Christmas going to be this year, Santa Claus? And he goes, Nashville and the world are never going to forget me. Now, the neighbor, you know, we look at that now and go, oh, my gosh, why didn't he call the police? The guy's going to do, well, that's an innocuous thing to say. You know, what the neighbor said was, well, I thought nothing of it other than maybe he's got something good going for the new year, a new gig or something. Who knows? But as I pull this apart to kind of like assess it, one of the things that we look at in assessments, we know that suicide is often a component with many of these people that do active shooters, workplace violence type of people. This guy apparently was in the truck purposely when it detonated, so he wanted to kill himself. He wanted to get out. Was he targeting the AT&T building? There's some prima facie information that maybe he was targeting that. But the suicide component, you know, they'll never forget me. That's a statement that if you take it on face value, well, why would they have to remember you unless you were gone, right? So that's kind of like a mental state kind of a thing. The guy knew he was going to do this, and he wasn't going to be here after that bomb went off. But why do, you know, could we see that? Could we have seen that leakage? You know, a lot of times we'll see these people will say things about suicidal type of things where we hear them and, you know, could you go back and look later on? And that's what we do. As assessors, that's what we do. We look and we try to pick out these things and train and educate people in advance how, if they hear somebody saying something, you know, I really hate everybody in this school, this business, they've done it to me one time too many and they're going to be sorry next week. I mean, those are threats. That's an actual threat. You know, you have to be able to recognize that. When it comes to this guy, this Warner guy, you know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of that leakage that came out. How would you know what this guy was up to? Which tells me, like most other things, sometimes people are just nuts. Sometimes they just are. And they don't run around acting nuts. So what does a nut look like? I don't know. If you ask half my family, they'll tell you I'm nuts, right? But when we look out there, we see people, we know they have different ways of going about things, right? Their core values are different. Couldn't you say that they're nutty? Couldn't you say that people that want to switch over to socialism, they're nutty? What's wrong with them? Why aren't they thinking? And then you got a guy like this sitting in his basement hating the world or hating AT&T or hating somebody and assembling a bomb big enough to rock the downtown in Nashville and kill himself in the instance. You know, what is that all about? What are people all about? It's hard to fathom sometimes. It's hard to really wrap your hand around that, your head around that. But they're out there. And I found that interesting as we go into this new year. Will we have more of that under a Biden administration? You know, we've seen very limited school shootings because schools have been closed. When schools open up, you can anticipate there's going to be some violence in schools and in the workplaces that have been shut down and people are working from home. When everybody gets back together, you know, but you put people together, they love each other or they hate each other. You know, they kiss each other or they kill each other. So I guess we can anticipate that. Where are we going to be with terrorist attacks, though? I think Donald Trump made it pretty clear to anyone around the world that if they attacked us, he would not just hit them back and bloody their nose. He would stomp them into submission. I think he made that point pretty clear, and I think he was not afraid to do that. Will Joe Biden do that? Are Joe Biden and our friends on the left, are they going to strike out and hit a terrorist and not just hit them, but destroy them? I mean, look what Donald Trump did to ISIS. You know, I mean, President Obama fought them, and we lost people, and it went on and on. Trump went in there and cleaned it out when he changed the marching orders. When he said, we're going to go in and win. We're not just going to fight. We're not going to make an effort. We're going to go in and wipe them out. And that's what we did. But they are an evil entity, these terrorists. And they're in the background, waiting for their opportunity. Now, their opportunity is they have to be pragmatic about it. We can come out and do something, and then we can get destroyed again. Or we can bide our time and wait for a weaker leader to come along, to wait for somebody who may not destroy us, who maybe just might punch us in the nose, and then we keep going. Is that what's going to happen with Joe Biden as we go into the new realm, the new era, the new world? I don't know. I guess we're going to find out and see. My immediate thoughts are, yes, our friends on the left are a little bit weak. They're, they see the world differently. They don't see the dangers that I see. They don't handle things the way I would handle them, but they're about to be in charge. They're about to be calling the shots. They're about to be protecting you and your family. So I do hope that they're good at it. I hope they do well. I hope they make the right decisions, and I hope they look after America and keep us safe as we go forward. You know, so I'm thinking about, you know, this COVID thing, and I only want to give it a minute because we're almost done for this week. You know, this episode here is almost done. It goes so fast, doesn't it? You know, we have this time together and it goes like lightning. But I'm looking at this whole COVID situation. And are you going to take the shot? Are you going to go in there and get that needle? You know, I would like to think, I take a flu shot every year. And it tells you it's, what, 60% it works and 40% it don't. This thing you're saying is 90%, but you got to keep getting boosters. And then you hear people having, you know, bad reactions to it. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to go and do that right off the bat because we are isolated here. I am working from home. I'm limiting my time out. I'm limiting my exposure to other people. I'm trying to do the right thing. I wear the mask when I go to church. I'm trying to do all the right things. So I'm just not sure exactly what I'm going to do. Are you going to go out and get that vaccination? Are you going to take your family down there and have them vaccinated? It's going to be interesting to see as this starts to play out over the winter. as we start to see more and more people get vaccinated. Now, it seems, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not an epidemiologist, I'm not a medical person. It seems to me that they've given out quite a few doses of this around the world, right? Several millions of doses around the world. And we got a handful of people who have had a bad allergic reaction. No one has died from it. You know, they had a bad reaction. So maybe on hand at the location where you get the shot, they have stuff standing by in case you have a bad reaction. Or maybe they give you something to take home with you that if you get home and you start to have this reaction, you know, the Benadryl or whatever it is that you have when you have a bad allergic reaction. But I would think a little more research would help us figure out what is it in the product that's making people have this reaction. And in time, it'll be safe or it won't. If it's not, they'll keep looking. If it is safe, I think it'll probably become part of our lives. There's one company I heard is trying to do a regular flu shot with the COVID shot so that you take them at the same time. You know, you take that would be what you do in the fall now. You know, like you get the MMR, what is it? The measles, mumps, and rubella, all three things together. Well, maybe you take COVID-19, COVID-20, regular flu, SARS, you know, the other 14,000 things that are out there to kill us. Maybe we take all of that in one shot. It's just a question of who can you trust? Can you trust these people to do the right thing? Can you trust them to make sure that this stuff actually works? Can you trust them that they would tell you if it didn't? You know, we see our politicians lining up to get the shots. Are they really getting the shots? Or are they just telling us they're getting the shots? I don't know. That's one for another show. But I guess time will tell. You know, that's the old saying, time will tell. Well, I want to spend just a couple of seconds here as we get prepared to close this fine episode of Chasing Justice. I want to do a shout out to Rush Limbaugh. Rush, who has been a part of my life since 1988. I remember as a 20-something-year-old guy working in my backyard, listening to talk radio because I loved Bob Grant. I loved Bob Grant. He was great here in the Northeast. And Bob Grant came on at 3. And at 12 o'clock, I was listening to whatever radio, and all of a sudden I hear this, boom, 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 you know, that song, Going to Ohio. And here comes this Rush Limbaugh guy, and he had these funny gigs, these funny bits that he did, and he said the things that I believed, and it was really very interesting. And we love Rush here in our house, and we're praying for him. And I would ask everybody to say a prayer for the guy. He has changed the world of radio. He has changed the world of conservatism. And he is in a tough way right now. And he did a pretty good goodbye show the other day. I think he's going to come back because I think he's hanging in there a little bit. But we all love Rush here. And I want to say from Chasing Justice and the Chasing Justice family to you, Rush Limbaugh, God bless you and Godspeed. I hope all goes well for you. But you've made a distance. So, hey, listen, everybody here on Chasing Justice, we will see you next time. And remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. Think about how you want your future to go.